actually designing many of our web pieces and all of the features that we're putting together through the university to complement the long-form stories. So the advent of strategic content allowed our media relations team to really beef up their pitches. They use our materials that we're creating, either photos, videos, anything, when they're pitching, and they're able to look at the journalist and say, here's what we have, you are welcome to all of it. You don't need to use any of it if you want to write your own story. This is what we're doing, this is when it's going live. And our most recent success with this was actually last week, when a story that we published in May ended up on MSNBC and Inside Edition. This is Tori. She was born with only one digit on each hand, and Michael, who is one of our students, he was part of a club on campus called Enabled. They make 3D printed hands for people in need, and had the club had really languished for about a year. They couldn't find anybody that needed a 3D printed hand. Then Michael got into a cab, it was actually an Uber, with Tori's father, and asked him about his family, and he started telling him, we just adopted this young girl, our daughter, from overseas, and we're trying to get a prosthetic for her, but it's too expensive because she's going to grow out of it. And Michael went, hold on, wait a second. My club does this. We're looking for someone. This is exactly what we're trying to do. So everything clicked. Our students were able to work with the family, and they got her 3D printed prosthetics. And they're going to continue to work with her family as she grows so that she can always have prosthetics in mind. So it's a really great town gown story where, you know, Notre Dame's helping people in our community, as well as getting some national attention to it. And the tweets looked pretty familiar from Inside Edition when they rolled out. Theirs is in the top left corner, mine's in the bottom right. We can tell a little more of their story because they don't necessarily need to know about Notre Dame students, and it's just an Indiana girl. But national exposure is not necessarily our end goal with our strategic content team. It is icing on the cake when we are creating dynamic content for our main page, which I do have to plug, is being redesigned as we speak. We'll roll out hopefully next Wednesday, so check back on nd.edu next week. And what we're all here for, social media, which is our main avenue of distribution for these stories that we create. Now, prior to my coming on board in early 2013, social media did not have direction at Notre Dame. We had Twitter accounts, we had the Facebook account, we had YouTube. We posted when we had a news release or when people across campus were really asking us to promote things. But it didn't really have a rhyme or reason as to what was going on there in terms of strategy or audience building or anything, really. And now, as I'm sure everybody in this room knows, nothing happens instantaneously in higher ed, so that didn't change overnight. We spent the next 2 years slowly shifting our strategy on social media to become much more externally focused rather than internally focused. And when I started, we had much smaller follower accounts than we did now, so we assumed that they were mainly the students, faculty, and staff, people sitting on our campus. And that's who we were talking to. We were telling them, there's an event at the library today, there's an event in this museum today, come get your flu shots, come do this. And while those are all important things, they're not the only message that we wanted to send. So we saw that we needed to try to reach outside of campus if our social media accounts were going to support our strategic priorities. And our audience was already there. We subscribed to a service called Follower Wonk, which shows us maps of 5,000 of our Twitter followers. And these numbers are probably pretty small on these screens. But they're kind of pretty small. There's about 1,000 people within the Midwest right there. And then you get into like ones and twos as you get across the world. But it's only mapping 3% of our followers. So if each of these places added 97% more followers, we can see that we need to talk externally as well. And even if I zoom in to neighboring states closest to us, more people are sitting in Chicago and Indianapolis than are sitting in South Bend for us. So why are we only focusing on South Bend? The same is true on Facebook, where our top cities outside of our local area are, I'm sure, much like yours, major metropolitan areas, Chicago, New York, LA, DC. And then outside the United States, shockingly, we're looking at Ireland, but also Bangladesh, Mexico, and Brazil. And interestingly enough, these are 4 stories that our strategic content team put out in the past year. So it's kind of like the field of dreams. If you write it and post it, they'll come. So we have Mexico, we have Bangladesh here, we have Ireland in a couple of places, touching on the borders. And I'd really like to zero into the top left corner there on Brazil to show you how strategic content kind of lives at that intersection of media relations and marketing. So in fall of 2017, our media relations team put out the news that Brazilian judge Sergio Moro was going to be our 2018 commencement speaker. Clearly, this is always a very important announcement. All of our seniors are crossing their fingers that it's going to be someone really cool. They're always hoping for Stephen Colbert. It's never Stephen Colbert. But they're really hoping that it's going to be someone that they know. Now, I'm not even going to ask you for a show of your hands, but who knew who Sergio Moro is? So we knew that we needed to tell people who this man is, what he does, and why he's so important, and why we are honoring him with becoming the commencement speaker. So we posted this video to our Instagram story and our Facebook page. I'm going to make sure that it's playing because I don't... Yeah, it is. To our Instagram story and our Facebook page to give people a little more insight into who Judge Moro is. Long story short, he's a federal judge who presided over an anti-corruption case in Brazil. Think Brazil's Robert Mueller. And it ended up with the Brazilian president in jail. Now, we can't tell people it's Brazil's Robert Mueller because that gets kind of political. But unsurprisingly, he's either wildly popular in the area or the biggest enemy of people in that country. So we tell people who he is. And then in April of this year, we began to get a lot of inquiries about attending commencement by Brazilians. We had a couple of people send us Facebook messages asking if they needed tickets, telling us, oh, we already have our tickets booked, or my daughter's graduating from somewhere in the United States and we're staying over and staying in South Bend. We can't wait to see him. And we're like, wow, oh my gosh, this is great. We didn't think there was going to be any interest in commencement this year. And there's a ton. But we also started hearing on campus, so when is the university going to announce who our commencement speaker is? Uh-oh. So in April, the strategic content team put together this piece, Jailing the Untouchables. It fleshes out the story a little more to explain exactly what the Lava Jato operation that Judge Moro was involved in was and how it affected the country of Brazil. And on social media, it allowed us to say, hey guys, we've already talked about him. And it was a way to kind of not tell people on campus, you weren't paying attention in October when we announced this, or you didn't have a long-term memory enough, which I will admit I was one of them who in April said, we haven't announced that guy yet, have we? We had. To kind of tell more of a story and tell more of what we're going to do. So this is an example of how we sit between media relations and marketing. We're kind of marketing for the university, marketing events that are going on campus, but also media relations had already finished with this story. They weren't going to touch him again until he was on campus for commencement, and we were able to add into that conversation. But that's also pretty straightforward social media. So how is social media different now than it was pre-Notre Dame stories? And to answer that, I have to go back to a campaign that predates strategic content, our What Would You Fight For campaign. In 2007, we began asking the question, what would you fight for during halftime of Notre Dame football games? And we've asked the question of 79 different faculty, alumni, or students on campus. It actually just, we hit 80 today. You can see some of their answers here, but they're big, heavy questions. They range from better cancer detection to fighting the spread of fake news, which was our last one, to building bridges and fighting for immigrants seeking asylum. Our newest spot actually just went live at 11:45 today, and this weekend we are fighting for religious understanding. I really can't do it justice explaining what this campaign is, so I'm actually just going to play part of the spot at least.
What is Islam? In 1975, as an 18-year-old, I traveled to India to answer that exact question. For years, I studied at the madrasa, learning Islam at the feet of truly orthodox educators. In a vacuum, it made sense, but the world around me was changing. I began to ask, what is the relevance of Islam to my life as a Muslim living in the modern world? Today, most traditional forms of Islamic education do not address subjects such as science and evolution. But now, some in the madrasa leadership think it is time to change.
Through online education and seminars involving Notre Dame undergraduates, Professor Ibrahim Musa is training future Muslim educators to incorporate modern thought into classic curricula at madrasas, schools for Islamic education.
Graduates of madrasas shape the religious thinkings and practices of mainstream Muslims. They will play a transformative role as communicators who will advance peace and justice in their communities.
So this is really just very indicative of what these things are. Starting with the professor, moving into explaining exactly what he's doing. Eventually we end up talking to an undergraduate student who is working with the Madrasa project and Professor Musa. But it's heavy stuff. This is a Catholic school founded by a French priest named after the Fighting Irish, talking about Islam in the middle of a football game. That's nearly an impossible task if we hadn't had 10 years to back this up and 10 years of getting people used to what we were doing and what we were saying and what we were fighting for. And it's just difficult to communicate on social media. And we realized part of that was because we only had these 2-minute spots that NBC produces for us. So that is also the first question that I get. NBC does produce these spots. They work with us, but they have a team that goes out across the world getting the footage, creating it, and then working with us on scripts, stories, and what we're all going to put out together. And then it's kind of an agreement based on what NBC wants to show and what we want to show as well. And yes, second question that we always get is, we do see a "we won" bump. People really like looking at things again. If we won the football game that they saw this in the middle of, they're not so hot on it if we lost. But these pieces are very powerful, and they are very powerful to our alumni and in getting the word out and in the research that the university is doing out there. So we give them one of our biggest spots and avenues to share with people is during football games. So when I came on board in 2013, this campaign was already in its 7th year. It wasn't broken. I'm not going to try to fix it. So these were the types of posts that we put out that first year. I'm really not proud of the fact that I used to capitalize "you." What would you fight for? But we live and we learn. And then in 2016, Strategic Content got its hands on these things. So we launched fightingfor.nd.edu. It had previously redirected to just a page that looked like this. It's plain, it's boring, it's not fun, it's not engaging, and it doesn't deliver that experience that we wanted our audience to see, like the New York Times' Snowfall. So that year, we began to lead people to a page that looks like this. Not only do you have the video up at the top that you can click on to play, but there was a short summary of the piece and this gorgeous design element of the landscape on campus. So you can see the Golden Dome, the Basilica of the Sacred Heart, and the football stadium there. But if you look really close, you can see even statues on campus. So we have the Sacred Heart of Jesus statue outside the main building. It's a treasure trove of Easter eggs for Notre Dame fans. So they see something new each time they go there while they're scrolling, and they can just see something different. So it delivers that online experience for the audience. And we can also see that when we look at the increase in clicks year over year. Now, we're super far down this year. I'm going to point out that we're not even halfway through football season yet. So that number is only going to go up. But when we were entering the 10th season for these things, we kind of sat back and said, is this campaign still serving us? And decided, yes, it was, but we could do more with it. And that ended up being 6,500 words supporting each of the 6 stories that we have every single year. So this piece is Fighting to Explore the Moon. I put it all side by side there. It's a scrollable experience on the web. But it's 40 years of faculty members' research and trying to get us to go back to the moon and create moon bases and use it as a jumping point for Mars. He works with NASA a lot. So much more content here than we got in the 2-minute spot that focuses on him. So these long-form stories really exploded the opportunities for content on social media. We had so much more than just that 2-minute spot to be able to say things. And while the 2-minute spots are great, it's also relatively impossible to get 140 characters, or now 280 characters, out of each one of those to try to market these things on Twitter. So those are Facebook and Twitter. Prior to having these tech stories in our wheelhouse, we posted these stories on Friday afternoon, and fans at home would see them on Saturdays during the game, if they weren't in the stadium or at home couch, you know, they're on their couch, they're grabbing snacks, they're going to the bathroom, it's halftime, they're changing the channel. We wanted people to see these things, and we wanted to give them an opportunity to see them and explore them further. So We would follow up the next day once we got these long form stories with, on the left, that's our Friday post. On the right is what we posted the next week. It doesn't even necessarily reference the fighting for. People know on Friday afternoon, we're gonna see a what would you fight for this weekend. The next week, they're not necessarily thinking about it, but we still have that research and that opportunity to share what we're doing on campus with people. So it doesn't have to have that fighting for brand, and it still leads people to that page. And then last year, we got a big boost to this because we added a video board to Notre Dame Stadium. And for the first time, these spots were running in-game during halftime. Band leaves the field, these things start immediately. So yeah, you still have people in the bathroom grabbing snacks, doing whatever. But we added 70,000 people seeing these things. So if you do the math, the fighting for from the Michigan game actually this year reached 7,049,000 people during halftime. So part of our organic reach and impression success with this content is due to the fact that we increased the number of posts on each spot. But a large part of it is also due to the fact that we gave people another option. I know that we all sat through and heard video is the future and video is what we're doing and there's so many opportunities with video, but 80% of marketers are creating video content. 81% of marketers are creating video content, and not very many are creating long-form content that is a full, dedicated experience to let people know if you want to watch the video, you can watch the video. If you just want to read the pull quotes, read the pull quotes. When 80% of your newsfeed is auto-playing video, you might be more likely to stop on a very vivid picture with compelling text. And if you're not, we also have the video there for you to scroll through and want to watch that as well. So all that being said, we clearly found success in adding the long-form stories to our arsenal of the campaign on social media, but what did that success really look like? Now, this is my only slide where I'm actually gonna read verbatim what's on it. We saw a 277% increase in Twitter impressions, 209% in Twitter engagements. It's a 181% increase in social media performance overall. And our most important metric is clicks to that website, people that are there to learn more and see what we're doing as a university, and having the opportunity to click further deeper into the Notre Dame ecosystem. We had a 123% increase in clicks to that website. And clearly the time on page went up because instead of watching a 2-minute video and dumping out of the page, you now had 4 minutes of content to read. So this year we've also begun adding native video on Twitter and LinkedIn to the mix, so our total social views have already surpassed 2017. 2016 actually got a huge boost. We were fighting to cure food allergies at one point, and everybody knows someone with a peanut allergy, and everybody was sending things to everybody else. That's our only one that went like viral. But other than that, everything it's pretty much even keel. We talk about a lot of different topics, a lot of different colleges on campus. Business is probably the hardest one to translate into one of these, but we try it, and we fought to end poverty last year. So we were able to work with some of our business professors and go over to Africa and do some of the research that they're doing with people over in Africa. So that's the What Would You Fight For campaign, but how does social media fit in with the rest of strategic content and the rest of campus? And to tell you that, I'm gonna go through one more large project that we have. This is called the Women Lead campaign. It's our International Women's Day piece. And in 2019, this will be our fourth year pulling this all together. We take 7 female faculty from each one of our colleges and tell their stories, focusing on their research or their international ties. And if you're anything like us, while we do have a central communications team, there are communications professionals in every college, and this project involves all of them. The hardest part of this piece is by far not the writing. It's not the social media. It's not working with 7 different colleges on campus. It's finding time in these women's schedules to pull together these very strong visuals so that we can share their stories and try to get a cohesive piece that we can share with campus. I'm crossing my fingers that we can do it again this year. We've just started the process identifying the faculty members. But on social media, we dedicate the entire International Women's Day to celebrating these scholars and what they're doing on our campus. I'm only showing Twitter here, but these do live across all of our social platforms. The only component that we haven't managed to crack is putting videos out on YouTube that are dedicated interviews with these women or telling more of their stories, like the Fighting Force, just because there are 7 of them. And it's really hard to get 7 videos out of our videographers just for one day. But this project has involved AdVis in the past. I will say that all of our other content and everything else that I've shown for you, we do not have a paid strategy at the university. Everything is organic. Our AdVis are few and far between. Our boosted posts are few and far between. But these pieces, we know that people outside the United States celebrate International Women's Day so much more than the United States does, and especially in Italy. So this is our architecture professor, Selena Anders. She does a lot of work in Rome. She's doing a lot of things. We have a large international presence in Rome. Our global gateway is actually across the street from Colosseum. So people know who Notre Dame is there, and we wanted people in Italy to know that Notre Dame was celebrating International Women's Day as well and sharing that thing. So we boosted this into Italy, and the same thing with Tracy Kajewski-Correa, who does a lot of work with the Burj Khalifa. She designed a system to let them know when sandstorms and earthquakes are affecting their building, which is the tallest building in Abu Dhabi. So we promoted that post there as well so that people could find out more about what the research is doing and that Notre Dame does have a presence in these international areas as well. And we also partner with each of the colleges to let them tell their faculty story as well. So we create all of this content in-house and on our graphic designer on our side of things so that everything has a cohesive look and everything coming out of the university that day looks similar, sounds similar. And some of the communications directors do have video budgets and things like that. So they'll do interviews with their people, but they also share what we share. So we try to pull out quotes where they're talking about inspiring young women, inspiring their students in general, and then just kind of being, I love Jennifer Mason McAward there. She has a special obligation to model to her students what it means to be a woman who is a lawyer, a woman who is a professor, and a woman who has children. She's really has it all, and she doesn't pretend that it's the easiest thing in the world, and she shows her students that. But all of our comms directors have these, they show up on social media every day, and they also have the opportunity to kind of tease this. So they'll say, you know, Diane Pender Hughes, pay attention, like if you love Professor Diane Pender Hughes, you're gonna wanna pay attention to social media tomorrow. We're interviewing her, we're doing something there. And this also is the biggest project where all of our people in strategic content are interfacing with everybody on campus. We're talking to the professor, we're talking to the dean, we're talking to the comms director, we're talking to our videographers trying to get them involved, and just giving them as much as we can give them so that they know that we are there to support them and we are an option if they have stories that they want to tell as well. Yeah, that's, so if anybody has questions. I threw a lot of content there. So.
What is the word count that you typically work with on a long form piece?
We kind of let the story tell itself, so some of them will be much shorter, but they'll have a lot of design elements to them. So we did a piece on water fleas. One of our professors is studying water fleas, and that was not super compelling. It was very sciencey, and we couldn't boil it down because why are water fleas important? But for that piece, we probably wrote about 500 words, and then we had all of these design elements of like the water flea growing and magnifying as you scroll and like showing you the different components of what they do. We also have another piece on sleep research that one of our professors is doing that we're literally, I would be impressed if we had 300 words on that page. The rest was video or graphic elements, but when you get into our fighting force, they're probably about 1,000 to 1,500 words.
Oh. Hi, Haley from Cornell Tech. What is like the time frame from like the beginning idea for one of these long form pieces to when it's actually published?
They really have a varying range. We actually have a piece that is launching in 2 weeks that will have taken us a year from concept to when we're going to publish. We have some templates that we've built into our process. I think there are two of them on indie.edu right now, aside from the fighting for, where that'll be like, hey, we have this idea. Sometimes our communications directors will even give us content, and we'll just put it in one of our long-form templates. That could take 3 weeks. The hardest part is actually finding time on indie.edu, which is why we're redesigning. But we want to give things play on the main homepage because people do go there, people do click from there. And we really see a drop off when something's not on nd.edu and when it's just living on social, so we try to have them both in each place.
Have you guys thought at all about also sort of adding into the strategy like a Facebook Live component or an Instagram Live component to continue to get that reach out there and then draw people back to the website?
We have, yes. We have not done it from the university's main social media. Our development team did a couple of years ago. They were doing Google Hangouts with the professors who were in the fighting force. So it was like you saw them and then you're going over here the next week and learning more about the research. Our alumni association also does what they call Football Fridays, and they have like a big tailgate outside their building, and they actually debut the Fighting Four at 12:30. So everybody's kind of sitting around their captive audience eating their hot dogs, and they're like, hey, we're gonna show you this spot, and then they do an interview with the professor right there that's live streamed on the alumni Facebook page.
Sorry, this is fascinating. Lots of questions. Sean, University of Houston. Are you able, do you all produce a magazine? Because I'm curious, because our team, okay. So,
it's not us, but.
Okay, so it's not the same team.
No. So we have a creative meeting once a month with our media relations team, with us, with our print team, with our videography team and multimedia, and with our Notre Dame Magazine, who they're under the Office of Public Affairs and Communications umbrella, but they are a separate entity unto themselves. So we actually, there's a lot of interplay between us. If media relations can't get an op-ed placed, they actually send it to the magazine to see if the magazine will be interested. And for what we do, we really kind of work hand in hand and side by side. We just replaced the basilica in our basilica. And it was a year-long process, shut down the church for a while, have to tune an organ, have to figure out all these things. We let the magazine kind of share that story because it was a much more insular, Notre Dame focused, less researchy. So we built them a website, and all of the content lived on this subpage on magazine.nd.edu. They had videos, they had long form stories, they kind of had it all together. And I promoted that from the main social channels as well, but it wasn't actually a strategic content piece.
So strategic content does not ever cross-pollinate to magazine, or is it ever, okay.
No, we show up in our internal newspaper, but not in our alumni magazine.
Liz, thanks for this. This was really fascinating. When I think of long form right now, I think of podcasting as a fascinating mechanism for long form. So just your thoughts on podcasting in general in higher ed. I know a few universities are transferring to that.
Allison has my lovely sticker. We actually just launched a podcast about a month ago called Notre Dame Stories, which is why my boss is trying to kind of change our name. But it sounded better than Notre Dame Strategic Content on iTunes. But we are working on every 2 week. We missed this week. It should have been an on day, but he's in Rome and I'm here. So didn't hit that podcast date. But we are pairing one of our strategic content pieces with news and something that Media Relations has put out. So our most recent episode we called Heavenly Bodies, and it focuses on one of our researchers, Justin Krepp. He does a lot of planetary research, and they just discovered something new in space. He does that a lot. But we paired that with, we did a piece called Coda from Strategic Content that focuses on one of our Institute for Advanced Study fellows who was on campus for a year doing research on medieval chants and end of life, and kind of how we've gotten away with, as medicine has advanced, we've gotten away from like being together when people pass away. And back in medieval times, there were a lot of chants, and the story is beautiful. It's actually one of our best performing pieces of content. It's a 3-minute video. We were talking like, get shorter video. This video is beautiful, shares some medieval chants that have been performed for the first time in like 500 years in our basilica. And the way that she describes it is just so touching and moving. And it's like everybody takes a collective breath as they send this person off. So we had all of the video for that we just took audio out of and then told the story on top of it of what she was doing, and then paired that with research that a professor was doing as well.
Cool. So who's creating the podcast itself? Is that in your department?
That is Strategic Content, yeah. So my boss is the voice of it, Andy Fuller, and then our project manager, graphic designer, or myself kind of pinch it and like production on it as well.
Anyone else?
Oh.
Going back to your list of the different people on the strategic content team, I'm just curious about the specific roles, the project manager, what they're doing specifically, and if the data scientist is serving only the content team or if they have larger responsibilities within the division.
So yes to the data scientist. So he is working primarily with us, primarily with the media relations team, because we, in our reporting structure, kind of fall up under that that umbrella of media relations. So it's news and people that pitch and people that tell stories. He's working, he has some dedicated clients on campus that have him on retainer that are helping with, you know, A/B testing of the color of buttons that are happening on their websites. Or we have a graduate program that he's working very heavily with to try to increase. We have an insanely large international presence in this one grad program, so he's working on getting domestic people applying to it as well. So he's doing kind of similar things. He's like looking at our analytics, finding trends, seeing what we should talk about, but also doing very strict like data science-y things. And our project manager keeps us all on track, basically, but she also, the one that we started with actually left and went to Emory and is getting her MBA. But the person that we were able to hire after that came from the Philadelphia Inquirer. She has motion graphic design experience. So she is keeping us all in check, writing down everything that we're doing, giving us deadlines for everything that we should be doing. And then she actually, we just launched our economic impact report. So we have some graphics out for that. We have an Instagram story out for that right now. She designed all of those for me yesterday. So she has design elements as well to her job.